Hi, everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. How are you doing today, Faye?
I am all right. It is Easter, and it is just like any other day, which is quite sad, and I miss a Sunday roast, but needs must.
He is risen. Never forget. I always forget what Easter actually refers to. It is when he gets reborn.
I think so, yes. I'm not great shape about my religious knowledge, but I think you're right. I think that's the deal with today.
Chocolate in many forms comes into it, so
that's all I need to know, really.
I got quite upset thinking that I wasn't going to get any Easter eggs, and then my ex dropped one off for me yesterday, so that was really nice.
That is adorable and far less tragic than me, who went to the garage nearby yesterday and bought myself a Lindt chocolate bar because I couldn't bear the thought of not having anything.
Garage chocolate. It's like garage flowers.
Yeah. The cornerstone of every second thought. I'm embarrassed for myself. It's all right.
We thought we'd start out this episode just by going over the taglines, because we didn't last week, and obviously they're new, and I don't know, I have some thoughts on them, and I've also just made some brief notes on the outfits as well.
Yes.
So we start off with Dorinda saying, and this one, I mean, the mind boggles, I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong.
I mean, it's a bit of enigma, isn't it? There's not really, it doesn't mean anything.
Not a lot of substance.
No, what does that mean?
Does it mean that she knows that she's basically never right, but has the attitude of someone that is?
I think that's probably it. It's somebody who will never willingly admit that they're actually wrong about anything, even though they know deep down that they're very much wrong about almost everything.
It's bizarre to me. It's almost like celebrating the fact that you're just being a bit of a knob.
Yeah, and you're too ignorant to admit when you're in the wrong.
I'm also really not feeling the dress. It has those weird kind of superhero pointy bustier details that kind of like stick out, you know, like away from your person.
Yeah, they're very strange and they're not flattering on anybody. There is nobody that has ever looked good on.
No, even Bella Hadid.
Yeah. Cannot pull that off.
With like the most lithe figure on the planet. I just think it looks kind of like cheap.
It does. It looks like bad tailoring.
Yes, it does. It looks like a project runway that time.
Yeah, and they kind of just quickly tacked something together because they're like, this sort of vaguely goes over their boobs. So, I mean, it's sort of fitted, but it's just fitted into a very misshapen point in a place that no one's chest ever is.
Yeah, just avant-garde because it's... Yes. Not actually flattering. I love it when fashion is just avant-garde, when it just looks wrong.
Yeah. It's like, I fucked this up, so how can I style it out? Make it avant-garde.
So then we move to Sonia. Do you say Sonia or Sonia?
I think I say Sonia, but okay. I don't know if that's because I'm Northern, in the same way that it's like the scone thing.
Okay, I'm going to try and say Sonia as well, because... listening to myself last episode, I was annoying myself with the Sonia. I don't know why I'm saying that. So she says, I'm no one's accessory. I'm the whole lifestyle brand. This was genius.
It was genius. But also such a weird nod back to so many seasons ago with the whole, when, what was her name that was in it? She was tall and blonde.
Heather.
Yes, her. Yeah, around that era. It's like, we haven't really touched on that in quite a while, so it seems strange, unless she's trying to bring back her lifestyle brand now.
I feel that Sonia, as always, is kind of just a parody of herself. And I can't tell whether it's conscious or unconscious, because sometimes I do feel like she pokes fun at herself, but then sometimes I do just think, well, she's so deluded that, you know, she can't possibly be being ironic. I think she is sincere.
I don't know how self-aware she is in that sense.
Yeah, and I feel that someone wrote this for her.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it would come straight from her.
No. I do think she looks radiant in the red dress, but I do think it's a bit understated. I feel like on opening credits.
Yeah, I feel like Sonia could have done better with that.
Yeah, I agree. Then we go to Ramona. I don't need to find love. I love myself. And I feel like the message of that is slightly undermined by the openly weeping in cocktail bar shenanigans.
Absolutely. I don't need a man. I just love myself. That's all I need. And her first scene was her hysterical in public about not having a man.
But I love it for her as a sentiment.
I do as well. It is the most Ramona sentiment there could possibly be.
It is.
Do you know what I mean? Like, oh no, it's all me. Everything is me.
It was strong. She looks amazing as always.
Ramona does an opening credit good.
The only time I think she doesn't look amazing is when she does get kind of weepy and she goes quite red and then she gets sort of the veins, and it is a bit of, you know, when people have like ham on their face and then they cut out the eye holes, like there's tiny, tiny shades of that. But it's probably just because her face is so motionless the rest of the time. You know, when she's actually emoting, the blood rushes up to her face. It has to service this almost unheard of need.
It has to work overtime to start creating it.
Yeah, and so she does go a very unusual shade. But I can't hold that against her, obviously. I mean, she's 64 and she looks, you know, better than I look most days. So.
Absolutely.
Leah, new girl. I may float like a butterfly, but I sting like a bitch.
I actually really like this for her. I think it's such a, like, far removed from, like, all the other ones. Do you know what I mean? It makes her kind of immediately set aside from the rest of them.
Yeah, it's ever so slightly cringy, but I also buy into it. Like, I believe that from her.
I do as well. Like, it doesn't sound like some kind of canned thing. Like, it is a little bit on the cringy side. But it also, I think there's something about her where it's like, it seems very authentic at the same time.
Yeah, we kind of spoke about that last week, that she's not like an Erica Jane who pretends to not give a fuck.
Yeah, exactly. She's very much just like living that truth for herself.
100%. Oh, I see, I'm saying it. I'm going to start a swear jar.
Every time you say 100%, you've got to put a pound coin in it.
Every time. I need to come up with new ways of saying that I agree with you.
You know
when someone holds a series of doors open for you, and every time you thank them in a different way, and you're like, thanks, oh, thanks so much, cheers.
Yeah.
And then you just have to keep coming up with and then it just gets too stressful. Take a left so you don't have to come up with another synonym.
We'll have to thesaurus it at the end. We'll find you some other words for it.
Thesaurus.com.
Yeah.
Where I spend a lot of my time. So then we go to Tinsley. Life isn't a fairy tale, but I'm hoping mine is the exception.
Oh, it's
your so life funny. Is a fucking fairy tale, Tinsley. You it live is. In a fucking 5-star hotel.
The whole thing is just, I mean, it's so Tinsley, but it's so like saccharine and sugary and just like, it kind of gives me the ick factor a little bit.
Yeah, and like I say, it's just so insincere, because it's like, you don't do your own laundry, you never have, you know, get fucked, like, not any problems, like, you're rich, you're attractive, you know, you're obviously a fun person to be around.
Exactly. I think it's just, oh, it is exactly what we were saying last week about as well, is that everything is centered around, like, to have a fairy tale, I have to have, like, this man and this husband and this sort of dream fairy tale lifestyle. And it's like, oh, your life is already a fairy tale. Let it go.
Yeah. And I just feel like, obviously money's no object and stuff. And I'm kind of like, you know, I can understand why you wouldn't want to go on a parenting journey alone, but she's got her mum around. And I just feel like, just do a Sheena then, or, you know,
exactly.
Do a Gigi and try and get pregnant solo, and you could have a nanny and you could have a team around you. And, you know, if that's really what you want,
just go for it. I mean, it seems like she's got quite good, like, family bonds as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, her, like, obviously her and her mum are like super close. So it's not like she'd be completely alone.
Dale would love to be a grandmother.
Oh, can you imagine? Imagine having
a grandma, like, title of grandmother, but she would have everything that it entailed.
I would love to have a grandma that fabulous. Can you imagine?
My grandma in Lincolnshire, she has like a luncheon club that she goes to. And I went with her for one of her birthdays. And there was this woman there. I think she's passed away now, unfortunately. And she was called Wynn, I think, like W-Y-N-N.
Amazing.
She was dripping in diamonds. She had like an immaculate sort of chignon updo, you know, fur coat. And she was probably 93, 94. And you know, perfect red lipstick. And she looked amazing. And I was just like, that's so nice to still be, you know, making an effort. And she was just amazing.
I love that. That's my ultimate goal for when I get old, is I just want to be this like fabulous old woman, just like swanning around in kimonos and red lipstick.
That's almost what I've devolved into. As a result of the lockdown, I do have a silk kimono that I was wearing yesterday.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I've been looking for one for so long.
I've got one that you might like. Remind me. Then we go to Luann's, which is a stage metaphor that I'm not even going to dignify with repeating. but I have to respect, she's opted for an above the knee look, a sparkly gold. Her body is insane.
Oh my God, I know. Luann looks phenomenal.
I mean, she looked great anyway, but if she actually is not drinking, then I think it's the not drinking that's made her look particularly good.
I do as well. And literally when I was watching the episode, there's a couple of scenes in, I was like, God, she looks amazing. I think it's when she's having lunch with Ramona. And I was like, she looks incredible.
And so understated with her makeup as well. She just has a beautiful kind of bone structure.
Yeah, it's that like effortless kind of easy chic kind of look where it's just like, oh, love it, love that for her.
It's, you can tell that she feels an affinity with the French, and I think it's, that's like that fake French part of her. She knows how to go for that Parisian,
yeah,
sort of, you know. The hair is obviously styled, but it's kind of not styled. She doesn't do the big false lashes, and she's quite understated in a lot of ways. It was like her court look with the little blazer and the plimsolls. That was very fresh to me.
Absolutely. No, I think it's so like easy, effortless. It's just perfect. I think it really suits her as well. I think because she's so tall and she's got quite sort of like a strong build, shall we say. Like she's got quite broad shoulders and things.
I completely agree. She's quite broad.
Yeah, and I think she's managed just to make herself still look really feminine by doing all that sort of like easy, slightly undone, not over styled kind of look for her.
Yeah, she would look too rigid and a strapless kind of busty.
Yeah, it would look really forced and uncomfortable.
Yeah, or like, you know, a Tinsley ruffled moment would be overpowering.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think she's nailed her like personal style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think she has a stylist either. I think it's all her.
Yeah, I think I can tell it sort of organically comes from her, I think.
Mm, definitely. So going into the episode, we have Sonia walking into the bar, just openly proclaiming that there will be men who are going to pick them up. And that they should just try to ignore them. And this was just so great.
I love that immediate energy of walking into bar. Just like, yeah, they're obviously going to come and talk to us, but we just ignore them. This is our girl time.
There were so many frat boys in that bar.
There was. I think that's the busiest place I've ever seen them film anything for New York Housewives.
It looked kind of unpleasantly busy to me.
It did. It was kind of my idea of hell, where like tables are too close together and everybody's like very overpowering and stood around and like, no.
It just didn't have the rooftop vibe that I would want to be going for. I'd want like a more of a loungy kind of style rather than a crammed terrace.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it needed to be a little bit like calmer, a little bit more chilled, a little bit more like elegant, especially for them to be filming there.
Yeah, this is not what we've come to expect.
It's not. Subpar.
So then Tinsley accuses Sonia of jumping on the Dorinda bandwagon, and Sonia basically stands by the fact that they've been seen together after the official breakup announcement. So Tinsley and Scott have been kind of going out, still meeting up, which does corroborate with Dorinda's accusations.
It does. And I also do understand what Tinsley was saying, where she was like, I don't really feel like I should have to constantly like tell people like, oh, we're back together, oh, we're back off again. But I can understand why it comes across as seeming a bit fake and a bit secretive at the same time.
I think the New York ladies in particular do have everything out on the table.
Yeah, I think that's a lot more than other cities.
The tradition of like Bethany, and I think that's just the way that the show has kind of evolved very naturally, and I think that's why they're all up in arms about it. You know, same for Sonia losing the house and stuff. I think that because that's always been the standard, that's why they're kind of unhappy with Tinsley about it. What I think is interesting, though, is, you know how they're all saying, oh, you know, they've got this arrangement, he's buying her things, when we know that she's independently wealthy, we know that she doesn't need to work. They obviously know that too. And so it does kind of make me think, well, do they know something that we don't? And is there some truth to that?
I know. I always wonder about this as well, because it is like, she's not exactly short for money herself. Her family's obviously incredibly wealthy as well. So it makes me kind of think like there must be maybe something that we're not seeing. And like, it obviously goes like extends further than just him buying her gifts in a way that like an incredibly rich other half would buy their other half gifts. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of trying to find the differentiation between what would be a normal appropriate amount for people that have that much wealth and what's in like a weird territory.
Do you think it's not about gifts? Do you think it's about something else?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting point, though.
I think there might be something nefarious involved.
Oh, that would be such a scandal, wouldn't it?
I wouldn't be surprised if clothes and shoes were almost like a code word.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just something that I'm thinking about, because like I say, they know her situation, so they keep kind of hinting at this narrative of this arrangement of, you know, oh, they've got this agreement. So I'm like, well,
it's true.
Anyway, something to consider.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see how that unfolds a little bit. We should do some little like internet sleuthing.
I might do that, because also Tinsley does have that very frantic energy.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem to me like a sloppy drunk, but I feel, I don't know, you know, there's definitely something that's a bit, I don't know, just my opinion. And then Leia thinks Tinsley is more open with them because they don't accuse her of being a prostitute. It's a trait that I really value in my friends.
It is what I look for in friendships, really. I did love that when Leah was just like, if somebody treated me like that, I wouldn't tell a bitch what I had for lunch.
Yeah.
I love that. I thought that was brilliant.
And Tinsley's just basically monologuing over the waitress this entire time. He's like trying to push the menus in front of them and then trying to take their order. But again, you can tell that Tinsley, like, once she's worked up about something, she'll just kind of keep going and keep going, and she keeps bringing it up.
Yeah, she gets like full blinkers as well, doesn't she? Like, nothing else happens around it. There is nothing else to discuss. Like, this must be beaten to death until it's over.
Yeah, for someone who has a sibling, I think she exudes a strong only child vibe. Yeah.
I can totally, totally see that.
But maybe that's also just living alone. I think living alone kind of does that to you as well.
Yeah, I think you kind of start to get so reliant on your own thoughts and your own kind of what's going on in your own head that you stop being able to sort of be as aware of when you're flogging a dead horse with things.
Yeah, you also spend the most time with yourself, so you do come to truly believe that you're the most interesting person.
Absolutely. I mean, I live with
Greg. I'm in place. That's serious. But then sometimes you forget that your thoughts and many hot takes on things are not as fascinating to other people.
Yeah, I'm quite guilty of that, even though, like, obviously I live with Greg and everything, but I grew up an only child. I lived by myself for my entire life, basically. There was only ever me and my parents. So yeah. I'm very much guilty of that, where I just think that everything that I'm thinking is definitely interesting and people definitely want to hear this.
It's good that we have this space now to just air these thoughts.
This is just essentially a manifestation of all of our single child thoughts.
I think we got two plays on our first episode, and I think they were us.
Do you know, I'm fine with that.
It's going well.
It is.
So, and we also go back, I don't know if you clocked this, to the weird testimonial look that we talked about last week. And at one stage, it flicks back to her and it's almost like they've recurled the bangs and it almost takes it to like a Grinch film extra kind of level of madness. Did you notice that?
I didn't. Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch that after this.
Go back and take, it was just in this scene and they flick to that testimonial look once with the pink top. And then they flick back and her hair just has this complete new curl on either side. But it's just, it was only for a split second, but it was quite something.
That's so
Leah reveals that she has a tramp stamp.
Mm-hmm.
Sonia is not into tattoos.
I'm so surprised that I didn't think Sonia was the kind of person that would get all up on someone's dick about something like that.
So I have a theory about this.
Right.
So we'll kind of go into it a bit later because obviously this whole topic gets brought up again.
Yeah.
But I think that Sonia, for whatever reason, is latching onto this because it's, she sees it, and I'm not saying this is at all the case from my opinion, but I think she sees it as like a class thing.
Yeah, I think that's what all of them had a problem with later on. Whether they wanted to admit it or not, I think that's exactly where it all came from.
Now, I don't have any tattoos. My mother would disinherit me. And also, I change my mind too much, I think. So I think I'd get something, but then, like, I go through phases of being really obsessed with things, then go off them. And so I think over the course of many years, that would happen to me too much. But you have quite a few, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I'm somewhere in the 20s, I think, with the tattoos that I've got now.
Do you?
Yeah, and one of those things where I was like, I put so much pressure on like picking the first one and it had to be perfect and it had to be this and that and the other, and by the time I'd got one of them over and done with, I was just like, oh, it doesn't even matter that much, and I kind of don't really even notice them on myself anymore.
Yeah, you see, this is what I would be worried about for myself. I have a very obsessive, like addictive personality, so I think if I got one, I would just keep going and going.
Oh yeah, that's definitely a thing.
My mum didn't let me get any piercings. Like, she didn't even let me get my ears pierced for, well, the entire time that I lived at home.
Really?
And then I went to uni and I swear I got like 7 piercings in the space of 2 weeks. So it was such a counterintuitive rule because obviously I just acted out completely.
Yeah, like as soon as it was all right, it was like, that's it, I'm getting it all done.
Yeah, and I feel like I'd be a bit the same with tattoos. But do you have any that you got and that you even have like slight regrets about, or not at all?
There's a couple that I have where I like them covered, but not because I necessarily regret them. I just think they're a bit shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had like the first ever one I got done was this. It is like the shittest little tiny heart on my ankle, and it was like proper bedroom scratcher kit that my friend had bought on eBay, and it got infected, and I had to go to the doctors about it. My parents furious about it, but they were only furious because I'd been stupid enough to get it done in a bedroom.
Yeah, you see, that for me, I'd just be like hepatitis. Like,
see, I was a very sort of like woefully ignorant youth with that respect. Like, I got my septum pierced in like McDonald's and things like that. Like, I was just like, ah, this is all fine. Nothing can go wrong. It did. Everything went wrong.
Do you remember the website vampirefreaks.com? Yeah. That is the most vampire freak stuff anecdote I've ever heard. I bet. Did you have a profile?
I didn't, but only because I couldn't work it out. I was very big on MySpace though.
I don't doubt that you were big on MySpace.
Oh god, I'm dying for myself. I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, I got all my, well, I think I got like 5 piercings just in my earlobes, just standard ones. And I got that done by a gun with my flatmate at uni.
Nice. She just
went through. And then, oh, this was really bad. We did her boyfriend's nose with the gun.
No.
Yeah, I know, which you're not meant to do at all. Yeah, complete madness. But he was like a rugby guy, so he actively wanted it, and it was this whole thing of like, I want to prove that I can do this, blah blah blah. So he was fully egging us on.
Oh my god, no. Oh no.
So to be fair, the tattoos you have that you've gone off, that's more like a personal taste thing than like a I regret this.
Yeah, like I don't regret having any of them, but it's more just the ones that I'd get covered just because they're a bit shit and kind of poorly done.
Yeah, and you just want to replace it with something like new and more.
Yeah, something that's a little bit better. Obviously, I have the added bonus of Greg being a tattooist, so I'm just like, cover this one, it's terrible, fix it.
That's true, that's really good. And what are your thoughts then on tramp stamps?
Oh, see, tramp stamps are a whole other thing, so I'm quite judgy. It's kind of weird, like, I think there's sort of judgy people who have no tattoos who judge people just for having them in general, and then I think the tattoo world can be quite judgy about people that have certain tattoos. Do you know what I mean? So there's some that are like prison tattoos, and there's like tribal, and then there's like tramp stamps, and they're all kind of looked down on by other tattooists and things like that.
Do you know what tattoo I always wanted as a child? Because someone in S Club 7 had one.
Are you going to tell me some kind of barbed wire thing?
Yeah, barbed wire around the bicep. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then whenever I would draw Barbies or anything, I'd always do like a barbed wire around the arm. Like,
I love
around
that.
The thigh as a garter.
Can you imagine you with it now though, Lou?
I cannot. I cannot.
Sorry, I'm brand for you.
In my mind, that was like the height of cool.
Oh, it was definitely at the time. If the tattoos that I'd wanted when I was younger I'd actually got, they would be so regretted.
Yeah, exactly. Or like a butterfly tramp stamp.
Yes, or like a dolphin.
So like Anastasia or like Shakira, you know, because you'd always have to have also the thong that was like coming over the low-rise jeans.
Super, super low-rise jeans where it was literally like hip bone, pubic bone, then your jeans. Which doesn't look good on anyone. I know they're trying to bring it back now. And I'm saying no.
Agree to disagree, Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, actually. I'll let Christina have it.
Like the dirty music video.
That was exactly what I was thinking.
I was pretty sure that that's what sex was. I just assumed it involved writhing around in the dirt in a boxing ring. Wearing yellow and black leather chaps.
So here for that fantasy.
Okay, we digress.
We do.
we go to Dorinda's place and she's packing for the Hamptons. And actually, this is very on brand with a sort of early 2000s fashion chat because she's holding up some kind of, like, if it's designer, it was probably Tom Ford for Gucci.
Yes.
Like, bondage-y bodycon dress with the silver rings.
Yeah, kind of like a little bit old Versace-inspired.
Yeah, yeah. And the housekeeper just doesn't really know how to process it. And it's just nervously laughing and then Dorinda's whipping out like her thongs.
I did strongly identify though with when she picked up that black thong, she's like, I don't even know what this is. How does this go on? And then she picked up that like huge beige bra and she's like, this is more me now. And I was like, I feel that on such a spiritual level.
Oh my God, yes. I remember sneaking out to H&M and like buying thongs and then like hiding them because I didn't want my mum to see that I had them.
I did that too. I was like, oh, they can't be seen to have like racy underwear. And now I'm like, we just like the idea of wearing an actual thong just gives me nightmares.
I haven't worn a thong since, probably since being at school.
I would say so, yeah. I think I probably hit about 17 and even then was like, this is wildly uncomfortable and not really all that flattering either.
No, no. I think the Family Guy quote tipped me over the edge when he says something about a walrus flossing. And I was like, yeah, I can't really unthink that now, so.
Into the bin the thongs went.
Absolutely. So then Ramona and Sonia meet for dinner. Oh, no.
It's Ramona and Lou.
Ramona and Lou meet for dinner and Ramona, this made me laugh so much. Ramona literally gets waylaid talking to a man at the bar on her way into the restaurant.
I love this.
At 64?
64, yeah.
I can only hope.
I dream of living that kind of life where you can't even walk into somewhere like past a bar without being like, oh, can I get your number? And she was like, oh, he was really, like, had really good manners, and he was really charming, and he was this, that, and the other, and Lou was just like, how? You literally walked past him.
I like the fact that men of that age actually would approach a woman.
I do as well, because I think it's such a weird thing to consider like our generation doing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, as long as it's done in the right way, obviously, which I feel this guy obviously did.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't like he came over and interrupted their dinner or kind of followed her to a table or...
I feel like in our generation, it's like either they'll slide into your DMs or they have to be hammered or they'll kind of make a move on the dance floor. Like they would never just talk or they,
yeah,
you know, so scared of rejection.
Yeah, that they can't even sort of fathom just walking up and introducing themselves to somebody. It's always got to be like a sort of calculated move or like, oh, I need to get like several tequilas in before I can go near you. Or I kind of, they kind of slide up next to you at the bar and then they try and make some kind of weird thing and you end up just looking at them a bit like, where have you came from? Like
just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
See, I've just long given up on the idea of being scared of rejection. And the last night out I had before this whole like lockdown situation, I was out with my friend Meg and we were at this bar and we were talking to some guys inside and they were nice, but they were kind of like, I think they were on like a work night out and the dads were all with them and
dads
would be, you know, kind of being too pally with us and it was a bit annoying. And then she went out for a smoke and she texted me and she was like, come outside, I found these two guys. So I came outside and there were these two sort of quite nice guys in barbers. We got talking, blah, blah, blah. And then at one point they were saying something and Meg just goes, hang on, have you got a girlfriend, to one of them? And he's like, yeah. And I turned to the one on my side and I'm like, have you got a girlfriend? And he's like, yeah. And we were just like, all right, okay, never mind. And we just left. And like, they're harsh, but I don't know. It was at the point of night where I was like, I'm not going to stay out unless there's going to be some fun to be had. But yeah, I will happily approach anyone. I was talking to my friend on WhatsApp today as well, and she was like, we always have the best time because you'll just go up and talk to anyone. And
I'm like, love that. I think that's such an important thing to have in a human being.
This is true. I mean, I think the fact that I'm female as well, like they're obviously not going to be scared of me. So they might not be into me, but they're not going to worry that I'm going to hurt them. So I do kind of feel bad for guys sometimes.
I know. I think it's such like a tenuous thing where it's like it's so hard to find the right balance, and like I do agree that it is hard to find the right balance.
I love that Ramona has created a vision board of her life.
Not even a vision board, a storyboard. She mapped the whole fucking thing out from start to finish. Like, it wasn't just like your regular vision board of like, oh, I'd like to have this kind of house and this kind of job and like, oh, nice husband. It was like, right, on this timeline, I want to meet somebody by this date and then I want the ring and then I want this and that.
That's big Virgo energy, though.
It is. It's so Virgo.
I can only respect it. And I actually, do you know what? I really like that she ordered a Diet Coke in solidarity with Luann. And
I thought it was nice.
I really think that Ramona is a better person than Luann is.
Do you?
I actually do.
I see, it's funny. I think they both have the traits where they'll sort of edge each other out every so often. I think Ramona is actually a really good person deep down. But I think just there's just something about the way that she just responds to people I just find so wildly bizarre.
I think she responds badly to Leah, but I think that's almost a new girl thing, and she did it to everyone, you know, she did it to Bethany. So, but I think that Ramona's been through a lot more in her life in terms of abusive childhood. I think she had a really great marriage that went to shit, whereas Luann's marriage I don't think was that great for a while, and it went to shit. And I just feel like she's come out of it the other side still somehow less unbearable than Luann, but that's quite an unpopular opinion, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit, see, I come and go with Luann, but at the minute I think I'm much more team Luann.
I'm rooting for her from a sobriety perspective.
I did love that she said dick pics. Like, I can't believe the word dick pics came out of her mouth.
Oh, come on, you know she has so many on her phone.
She has like a roster. She has them all coded, categorized,
You know that hidden album is bursting.
Oh no.
I was gonna say overflowing, and then that was an almost worse mental image. So I love that Ramona sneaks in the power move of pretending to forget Leah's name.
Yeah.
She's like, what is it? Layla? Layla? Leanne?
Yes, two syllables. It's like, bitch, you know it's Leah. Of Even course. If you didn't, the production team has told you to talk about it just before you sat down for dinner.
Yeah, but you see, she had to do that just to put her in her place.
Yeah.
Then we go to Tinsley's hotel for like a very fleeting scene. Honestly, Lee Tinsley could make living in a 5-star hotel with 2 adorable dogs and unlimited funds look this bleak.
I know, it was such a tragic little scene, wasn't it? Just her, like, in a tie-dye sweatsuit, translating Chinese for the dogs.
It was strange.
It was just, the whole thing was just very bizarre, and I'm not sure entirely why it was there.
Aside from just the kind of sad arc of Tinsley's storyline. I think it's just that whole thing of, like, the dogs are the replacement children.
Yeah, no.
Pushing.
They absolutely are. I think that's a very valid point. I think she's using them as a kind of like, I don't have anything. Kind of in the way that Ramona said she did with her dog, where she was just like, oh, even the dog won't listen to me kind of thing later on.
Mm.
But I think Tinsley's is in a much more like sad way.
Yeah. It's...
I think it's the dressing up of them, like in their little gingham bows and...
Even the names.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's so, like, 16-year-old, sweet 16, unimaginative, no real personality. So they kind of take on the personality that they think they should have kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. And why would you name a dog something that you couldn't sort of shout or that you couldn't easily shorten?
Yeah. Like, who's in the park shouting, strawberry? No.
Shortcake. Remember that viral video from years ago that was just like, Fenton! Jesus Christ, Fenton!
Fenton is such a strong dog name for shouting.
It is. So something with that, I could get. But yeah, no one's going to be like, Straubs. I guess you could say Straubs, but that's not easy. Shorty.
Tinsley doesn't strike me as the kind of woman that could
seriously misconstrued.
I know. She also doesn't strike me as the kind of woman that could pull off saying shorty in any sort of context.
No. No, certainly not. So we're all kind of piling into various chauffeured cars to go to the Hamptons. What are your thoughts on Leah's bucket hat?
So I don't really mind it as an aesthetic. However, the one thing that bothered me more than anything was that you could see the label at the back.
I wrote this down as well. I said, I don't like that when she turned around, you could see the flat tag just pressed against her head.
I hated that so much. Like, fucking cut it out. You have scissors.
I agree. Other than that, it was kind of a mood.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I also loved that it just baffled the other ladies, probably more than anything else could have. Like, she could have turned up completely naked and they probably understood it more than that bucket hat.
That's so true. They were like, is this fashion now?
Yeah.
What?
I think they have such an issue with, like, getting to grips with Leah because I think she sort of reminds them of everything that they're not.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, like, super young, super trendy, downtown, a little bit edgy, really, you know, unique. I think it kind of just, like, rings it true for them a little bit that they're all a bit, like, oh, we're creeping up to 60 now. Like,
I
don't know how old Leah is.
I couldn't agree with you more. How old is she?
Yeah.
Should we look it up?
Yeah, let's find out. I'm going to guess at like a mid-40s.
Let's see. 37.
Oh, so she is really young, actually, because usually the housewives are usually like nearing 50.
Yeah, she's a young one.
She is. Oh, that's definitely part of it then.
I completely agree, to be honest. Tinsley's basically lost her voice. She must smoke a packet a day.
Yeah, she has to. She absolutely has to.
She's constantly sounding croaky.
Yeah, she always sounds like a little bit hoarse and a little bit worse for wear. She kind of almost sounds like, you know, when like you go out all the time.
Yeah, a constant hangover.
Yeah, and you have that perma sort of like almost like a flu, but not a flu.
Yes.
I think it's a lot of that. I think there's probably a lot of drink and a lot of sort of recreational fun, shall we say.
See, this is where I think Scott might somehow slot into it.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're cracking the code.
And so Dorinda actually admits at this point that she judged Leah because she was Tinsley's friend, which I think just shows her up for the person that she is.
It does. And I was so surprised that she even admitted to that.
Yeah, and then she kind of plays it off in all of her testimonials. She'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, I did do that and I did that. And then she'll kind of just laugh it off and it's like, no. Yeah.
It's like, that's not what normal people do.
Or it doesn't invalidate what you've just said.
Yeah, just because you're aware that you've done it doesn't make it all right.
And then I really don't like how Sonia is kind of slut-shaming Leah for her tattoos when, to be honest, Sonia's on-screen sluttiness has been her entire sort of Roni staple or personality since this whole series began.
Exactly, and I find it so bizarre that she's, like, jumping so much, like, down Leah's throat on this kind of thing when it is, like, that's what Sonia's known for, and she always jokes about it, and she's like, oh, everybody should lighten up about it. It's just sex and blah, 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 blah. And yet she's so up on Leah about it.
And that's where it feels classist to me.
Yes, I completely agree.
Because I think Sonia thinks it's acceptable to get screwed on yachts in Monaco.
Yep.
In every which way. Sink. But yeah, it's clearly context driven for her.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like, yeah, the yacht in Monaco, fine. But somewhere in, like, downtown Manhattan, not classy.
Yeah, I just didn't... I wasn't expecting it from Sonia.
No, I wasn't. I was quite disappointed in Sonia this whole episode.
Yes, it was very messy.
It was. And it was that classic, like, not really mad at her, but I'm very disappointed in her.
I think that Sonia comes into her own where she gets messy in a very... in the way that she doesn't actually realise what she's doing. So she's very unfiltered, she'll speak her mind, and because she doesn't care about a lot of things and she'll, like, loll at herself, I think she assumes that other people will do the same, and that's how she sometimes puts her foot in it. And that is fun, and that's enjoyable. What isn't enjoyable is when you can kind of see the machinations and see that she's thinking, oh, I'm going to now go and tell this person this, and I'm going to mention that they said, and that's what it felt like this episode to me. It didn't feel like a, oh, whoops, like, shit, like,
yeah, you know, like, I put my foot again.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of apparent, like, when she's, like, when Tinsley was, like, why did you tell Dorinda about, like, Leah's tattoos? And she was, like, oh, because it was funny, and it, well, you know, it was going to be, like, a bit of drama, and this, that, and the other. And it's, like, she kind of tripped herself up there, where she just admitted that she'd done it because she thought it would just create this whole... sort of, not like an intentional, like, shitstorm, but I think she knew that it would create the conversation that it did.
Yeah, create some form of tension.
Yeah.
Could then kind of feed into.
Exactly. So, yeah, disappointed in Sonia this season, this episode.
Yeah, I agree. And then the Americans, this is what I was thinking, because then we go to the Hamptons. Americans would be really disappointed to experience, like, the original Southampton.
Yeah.
Southampton is a place that I had a couple of hours to kill once in between flights, and I took a train into town, and I would have had a better time at the airport. Just by the gate.
So I've never been, but I've seen and read and heard enough where I know that it's not exactly the top of my list of places in England to visit.
No, I mean, there's really nothing going on. Chain shops, lots of sort of, it's just not a particularly interesting place. I once had to spend a week at the Hilton in Southampton when I was going out with my ex, who was a pilot, and he was doing some training there. And even the Hilton, like, it wasn't that nice. There wasn't a pool or anything, but it was just far enough out of town that, like, you couldn't really walk it. And
oh, that's the worst.
Yeah, it was not great. I was very, very cabin feverish by the end of it.
I hate when a hotel is in that sort of awkward location where it's not, like, out in the country where it's, like, intentionally far away and peaceful and quiet, but you're
it's like round, like,
pop into town.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, to be fair, it would have made sense. I think this was, like, one near the airport, so it's in that horrible sort of semi-industrial, like,
see. You're really selling the fuck out of it, Lou.
Yeah, I know. I mean, obviously at the time I was like, yeah, just staying in the Hilton for a week, like, whatever, pilot boyfriend.
Yeah.
But then deep down I was like, the room service is so bad. And it just made me laugh as well because my mum is from the original Boston.
Oh, amazing. Oh my god.
Which is, like, the Brexit capital of England and probably the worst place I've ever been. I would
never have guessed. Never.
Yeah. So it's just one of those really funny things when you go to all of these places in America and you're like, oh, I remember I went to Brussels, Wisconsin once.
Oh.
Some, like, small town.
How was that?
It was just like a cute little small town. Yeah. But it's just so funny because you forget that for every place in England, there's basically like at least one in the States.
Oh, always. It's like Birmingham, Alabama. Although I imagine they're possibly quite similar.
I really like Birmingham. I like Birmingham.
Oh, I just can't get away with it. My cousin used to live there and I'd go visit occasionally. And I was like, just not about it.
I quite liked it, but again, this was my ex who was the pilot. He lived kind of in the suburban bit.
So oh, okay.
Centre of town was like a bit rough in places.
Yeah, not for me.
So Luann is literally being offered like a multi-room space that looks so nice and she's being so fucking rude about it.
I died at this section. So as a self-confessed introvert, the idea of having my own entire space like that where on a girl's weekend, if I got like just a bit overwhelmed and just wanted a bit of quiet time, I could go sit and watch my own TV and have my own bathroom and have an entire floor where it was quiet to myself. I was like, that is the fucking dream.
Literally perfect.
It's amazing. And she was just like, ugh, it's too cold. Ugh, what is this? Ramona, you said I could have the good room. Why have you put me here?
The way that she starts kind of aggressively shifting things around as well was so irritating.
It's like, you're there for like, what, a fucking weekend? It's probably only one night, two at the most. Like, deal with it.
Wasn't she a nurse as well? Like, can you imagine this woman actively caring for others?
I can't imagine having even a modicum of compassion for other people.
Yeah, it was shocking to me. And just the way that she was so outwardly, even when Ramona wasn't around, knowing that she's being filmed just like huffing and puffing and audibly sighing and rolling her eyes and this
muttering to herself, and the way that she was like trying to like get the TV to work, she's like, oh, and I was just like, she just struck me as the kind of woman who's never even turned on her own television before.
Yeah, and like, is she really going to watch TV over the course of the weekend? You know what I mean? It's just...
Exactly. And it's like, I refuse to believe that she doesn't have probably a fucking laptop, iPad, everything in the kitchen sink with her. Like, bitch, make it work.
And then Dorinda's getting stressed about her house renovation because her house in the Berkshires is flooded. And she's saying it's really stressful. She's got to go about her normal life. And again, it was just, it just wasn't really something that I was ready to offer up that much sympathy for. Like,
I wasn't either.
This show is her job.
Yeah, exactly. And it felt so kind of like, almost like humble braggy, but not even like a humble brag. Do you know what I mean? That kind of like, oh God, these problems. It's an extra 15 grand here and 20 grand there. And it's like, that would buy me a house.
Yeah, and also in a way where it's clear that she can actually afford that. She was just moaning about the fact that it kept, you know, clearly the money is not the actual issue.
Yeah, it's that it's out of her control. She also said something where she was like, oh, well, I can lean on John, but like, you know, he's never had these responsibilities. I was like, doesn't that man own a business and presumably also his own home or property?
Yeah, and he has staff that depend on him, most likely. Yeah. That's a big responsibility.
Yeah, I was like, the way that she's just like, he's never had this kind of responsibility. It's like, I'm pretty sure he has. Like, she's like, she does him such a disservice. And I know we were talking last week about, we have this weird, like, conflicting feeling about John. But I always feel like she does him down.
No, I think she does as well. And from what I've seen, at least on the show, I don't think he's ever kind of treated her badly. I don't get like a nasty vibe from him.
I don't at all. Like, I don't get like an aggressive vibe or like a malicious one or a kind of spiteful one at all.
No.
I think he can be a bit thoughtless, but
even when he's a bit sort of sleazy with the other ladies, yeah. It's kind of in a more of like a, I don't know.
I know what you mean. I think it's that kind of like slightly older generation's way of like thinking they're being charming.
Yeah, or like trying to be funny and lighthearted.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be a little bit charming and like, I want to make sure like you feel good about yourself. So my way of doing that is to be very overly complimentary, but also a little bit lechy because they think it's a compliment.
Yeah, it gets a bit lost in translation between.
Yeah, but I don't think his intentions are bad with it. I think he just doesn't really know how to behave in public.
And I think the other thing that Dorinda doesn't ever, or she sometimes acknowledges it, but the reason that John doesn't step up to the plate for her in some of those ways is because she actively doesn't let him.
Yeah, she sort of really cuts him off and sort of shuts him down before he even really has a chance to.
She keeps him at arm's length and she knows that she's doing it, but then she can't turn around and say, well, you know, we can't help with this because X, Y, Z. Because it's like, well, how do you know? Because you've never actually opened yourself up to that or made yourself vulnerable in that way to actually lean on him for that.
Exactly. Like, you've never given him the opportunity to prove that he can or can't be that person, which I just think is quite sad as well. Like, obviously, they've been together a long time. Like, we were saying last week, like, obviously, he really loves her. And I think she does love him. I think she just, I don't know what it is about it. It's almost like she has this slight, like, disdain for him. Or thinks he's beneath her.
She can never get fully on board for it because she's not fully healed from Richard. I truly believe that. But yes. I also believe that she never will be.
No, I don't think she will either. I think in the way that we were saying, like, Carol obviously moved on from her, like, husband dying. I don't think that's ever going to be on the cards for Dorinda. I think she just can't let things go.
I think the difference between Carol and Dorinda is that Carol strikes, and I don't know this for sure, but she strikes me as someone who's probably an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Who's probably like, well, you know, that's it. They're gone. They don't, you know, they don't really know what's happening with my life anymore. And therefore, I have to free myself up to move on. Whereas Dorinda's a lot more kind of spiritual and superstitious. And I think she still feels Richard's presence.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, I'd never really thought about that, but I think you're probably right.
And I think that might be partially to do with the not fully being able to move on, because I believe that Dorinda still, you know, lies in bed at night and kind of talks to Richard and believes that there's some kind of existing connection still.
Yeah, and that kind of, that he's always like looking down on her and he's always there and he's always this, that and the other. And not in that kind of like abstract way that a lot of people feel like that, where it's like, oh, I know my, like, dead loved ones, you know, always with me in a kind of like emotional sense, but I think she genuinely believes it in like an almost like physical sense.
Yeah. Whereas I think Carol, like I say, would be more like us in that, you know, she can appreciate and love things as a memory. I mean, I haven't actually read her book, so I guess I don't know really what the truth of the matter is, but she strikes me as someone who's more maybe a bit more cynical, a bit more of a realist, and a bit less kind of in touch with, you know, the possibility of some kind of supernatural.
I just think she's like so much more like practical as well. I do want to read a book though. Might see if I can find it somewhere.
Yeah, maybe we should buy it. We should read it.
I think we should. It's like a little book club.
Yeah, I'd be into that. Another thing that I thought, as we flip back to, they've kind of got a little food on the terrace setup is that I really hope the pool boy has union representation because he needs to be protected from these women.
I sincerely feared for his like emotional well-being as well. Like when it cut to him and I was like, oh, that poor man, like He does not know what's around him. He does not even probably realise who he is working for.
I think he was okay this episode because they weren't that many rosés in.
Yeah.
But God knows what could happen down the line. I just want to make sure that man has the law on his side.
You can tell there's a reason that Ramona hired that man. And it's not his pool cleaning capabilities.
Of course.
I think Ramona loves the idea of her little fantasy of like her little pool boy and living that true cougar lifestyle.
Ramona is a power woman, but what I respect from her is that I think she wants to date someone age appropriate, and I think she wants to date someone that makes sense.
Absolutely. But
I think, I don't know if she kind of sweeps around with younger guys. Like, I would love that for her if she did.
I would as well, but I also think she, like, I think she loves the idea of that, but I think she's too much of like a traditionalist to actually let herself do it.
Yeah.
I think she loves pretending that she's this, like, out on the prowl, cougar kind of like older lady looking for somebody like young and hot to go home with and just have like a fling with. But I think if she would ever even try to put that into practice, I don't think she could follow through with it.
Yeah, she loves the flirtation of it, but she wouldn't go the whole way to actually.
Yeah, I think she just likes the ego boost of knowing that somebody younger would probably want to get with her.
Yeah.
You heard all the rumours about, it was from so long ago, but apparently, like, Jax from Vanderpump Rules sleeping with Ramona.
Yes, I remember this. Do you think that happened?
I don't know. I wouldn't. It's one of those weird things, Warren. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it did. Do you know what I mean?
Would she, though? He'd be all over it, okay?
I'll be in there like a heartbeat.
I'm sure I could sleep with Jax if I wanted him.
But yeah, I don't know if she would truly go for it. Although I suppose he's not that young.
I mean, they're what, 27 years apart?
He's 40 something now. 40? Has he just turned 40?
Yeah, it was his 40th.
Yeah, so there's only like 24 years. So I suppose he's not like, he's probably like the perfect like buffer of like young, but not too young, but seems quite young, but isn't actually young.
And I can see if she was like feeling herself and in one of her, if she's in one of her like upper moods, like a fun, flirty fab.
I can so see that. Like the scene where she's walking around the restaurant and they're all going on about where she's like going into battle with like her tits up and like.
A modern day Boudicca. Bringing home the D.
Oh, God.
I did like that. I respect a friend that's going to go and like scope out a location.
I do as well. She did all the legwork for those ladies.
So we cut back to the pool and Dorinda's having a bit of a moment of self-reflection with Sonia, and she does actually acknowledge that she's been quite nasty.
So I kind of was like, oh, maybe this is going to be like a sort of good turning point for the episode. Maybe, you know, when Tinsley and Leah kind of come over and interact with them and stuff, she's going to be a little bit nicer and a bit more like soft maybe, or maybe kind of just, even if it's like a half-assed apology. But as soon as like they arrived, it was almost like that bit of self-reflection just vanished again, and she was just back to being bitchy and catty.
Yeah, it was a complete U-turn. It was like she acknowledged it and I was like, okay, I can see kind of how this might be happening. And then Leah comes and joins them, and she gets almost like this mean girl sorority initiation before they go to dinner.
It was like a bit of a weird baptism by fire of like them all just like rounding on her because she had like a tattoo, and they're like, right, this is the one thing that she has that none of us have, so we can band together and make fun of her about it.
But this is what drove me the most mental about it, and this is why I keep coming back to this whole thing that they're just being elitist, is that they seem to be forgetting that Tinsley has also been arrested. I mean, she even says at one point, she's like, well, I have a mugshot too, you know?
Exactly.
Tinsley also has a tattoo on her lower body.
And yet it's only Leah's that they're taking such issue with.
Yeah, and on the surface, it's because they can play it off as a class thing, and they can be like, oh, well, you know, she's a bit rough around the edges. But at its core, it's because they're intimidated because she's gorgeous and she's younger.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree with that analogy. I think that's exactly what it is. And it was like so telling when like Dorinda's little like talking head things in between. And it was like when she said like, oh, well, I was always just taught that, you know, when I was growing up that people had tattoos, it was because they were going to try and like rob you or whatever. And it's like, whilst that might have been true way back, like whichever century you were young, like anybody with any sort of like glimmer of social awareness can go, that's how I got taught when I was growing up. But blah, 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 blah. You know, it's really nice to see like a different type of tattoo or to sort of speak to somebody like Leah. And, you know, she could have styled it out so well and she just chose not to.
Yeah, because she's just trying to dig.
Yeah, I actually wrote down as well in my notes that I think she's trying to fill Bethany's boots by making these like funny, witty, sort of like slightly snarky, but like sarcastic comments. But whereas Bethany did it from a place of pure humor, hers always have this like very nasty undertone and she just can't pull it off.
And I also feel that Dorinda doesn't, I think Bethany was more willing to laugh at herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dorinda seems unable to turn that snarkiness, you know, back to face her and to also kind of poke fun at her misconceptions or her kind of putting her foot in her mouth or her bad behavior.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing of like, Bethany did that whole, like she did it really well where it's like, I've made fun of myself, so now I can make fun of you. Whereas Dorinda just wants to go in on other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so after they're all kind of sitting around the table, Sonia basically runs straight upstairs to Dorinda to tell her everything that's gone on, which is exactly what Tinsley predicted.
Yeah, she was so right.
And then Dorinda's already, in my mind, she seems wasted and she's making absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I thought that as well. It was such a random, like, just like another word salad where she was just like saying things that meant nothing.
Yeah, it was impossible to follow her train of logic.
Yeah, it was really, really bizarre. Can we also just backtrack just 1 second, though? Ramona making Tinsley and Leah clean up.
Now, okay. For me, I was like, I can't cope with people that come to my flat, and my flat is not nice at all, whatever, but people that come to my flat and, like, don't even offer.
No, so I can't bear that. It's just bad manners. Like, whenever we have people around here and stuff, like, I'll never ask people to do it, but I also kind of half expect people to just be like, oh, you know, if we've eaten, just, like, pile your plates up or something, or put a glass in the sink, or... sink,
like...
Yeah, but the way that Ramona came in and sat down, I was like, oh, these women just, you know, nobody clears up, and I didn't hire any help, but Leah and Tinsley are like, oh, we'll help, and she was like, oh, great, well, I'm just going to sit here and pour myself a drink while you guys do that. Like, I filled one dishwasher, and it was like, oh, my God, Ramona.
Yeah, that was a bit wild, the way that she was just like, I'm not doing anything anymore.
Yes. And then she was just like, oh, these women, they don't know how to entertain. It's like, they're at your house.
Oh, yeah, that did make me laugh, that comment.
And she's like muttering to herself, like, oh, these women, you know, they just don't know how to entertain or... like, what manners are or anything while she's busy pouring herself a drink while they clean up her stuff around her in her home.
That did make me lol.
I love that. That was literally, I think, possibly one of the highlights of the episode for me.
I'm so sorry that I skated over that.
That's quite all right. I was like, we need to go back to this a second. But we can circle back to the Dorinda and Sonia thing now.
Yeah, so then they kind of have a little meeting at the bottom of the stairs before they're about to go out to the restaurant. And then Dorinda sort of, she does this apology. And her tone to me, I just thought was disgusting, where she's like, sorry. Yeah,
it sounds so sarcastic.
It was so gross. I hate even using this word, but it triggered me so much because it reminds me of girls that will do everything to throw you under the bus, to humiliate you in front of people, and then play it off as like, what? Oh, sorry, yes. I didn't realise that. Oh, like, I thought we were laughing about that.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, well, you didn't get the joke. Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't understand the joke. Like, it's not really my fault you didn't get it and you weren't in on it, but I guess I'm sorry if your feelings were hurt.
CC Preeti Patel yesterday being questioned about how many NHS staff has died as a result of coronavirus and saying, I'm sorry if people feel like there have been failings.
No. it's just gaslighting in its purest form, isn't it?
I remember I was at a wedding and I was with some of my friends from uni, and we were like the uni friends, and we were on this table with people that we had never met before, that we didn't know, who were obviously all friends of the bride and groom. And one of my friends told this really embarrassing story of mine to the table while I was right there. And I was like shocked. I didn't know what to say. I was bright red. And I took her outside afterwards and I was like, you don't do that. And she was like, but you always laugh about that. And I'm like, yeah, to you guys, because I've been with you for 3 years.
Not to like strangers at a table who I've never met before.
Exactly. And she played the whole, oh, I didn't realize. And that's what this reminded me of.
So
like feigning ignorance, when it's like, you know what's socially appropriate, or exactly, you know what's likely to offend someone. And if you don't know someone that well, you err on the side of caution
always. That's just good manners. It's like exactly what Leah said, where she was just like, it's not the worst thing that anybody's ever said to me, it was just like, we've never had a conversation.
Like, yeah,
I don't know you well enough for you to be making those kind of jokes about me, which I totally get.
Leah is obviously the kind of person that will make an offensive joke, can take an offensive joke quite happily, and can laugh at herself.
Always.
But it is context dependent.
Yeah. And it's exactly who the other party is as well. Like, I imagine she wouldn't just go up to one of the random parents at a kid's school and make jokes like that, because she doesn't know them.
Exactly.
But she'll do it with her friends. And it's just about like having like awareness of the situation.
Yeah, I really didn't like Dorinda for this.
I didn't either. I was literally, by the end of this episode, I had such a sour taste in my mouth about Dorinda just in general.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't understand why Sonia's siding with her.
It's a wild move, and I'm interested to see kind of how it progresses throughout the season, and I'm interested to see if I still like Sonia by the end of this.
Me too. I think it's going to be a good sort of benchmark. And I think it's because she was like, oh, she's got so much going on. She's got so much going on. It's like, unless there's stuff that we don't know about that's going on, as far as I can tell, all that's going on is that her second home is having some repair work done.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not like her parents have like died in some horrible death, or like her daughter's sick or something really, really awful. It's like, yeah, it's stressful. I can imagine it's very stressful, but it's not a situation that is forgivable for being a bit of a dick to people.
Yeah, and also, like I say, it is, you don't really have another job. Like, I know the show, I'm sure filming it, like, is not as easy as it looks, but that's what, half a year max?
Yeah, exactly. And the other 6 months, like, even if she does have that cashmere business or what have you still, it's like, I'm sure you're not running it, like, on the ground by yourself. I'm sure you have, like, an astonishingly large management team who's realistically doing pretty much all of it.
Yeah, the legwork.
Yeah, it's just so wildly misguided. And I can't work out why Sonia's kind of creating this weird alliance, especially to the detriment of like her friendship with Tinsley.
Do you think that the reason that Sonia is siding with Dorinda against Leah is because Leah is kind of competition for men?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. And I think it's kind of Leah's everything that Sonia in her head thinks she is, but when confronted with somebody who's actually it, she realises that she's not. Does that make sense?
Like, what do you mean?
So, like, in Sonia's head, Sonia is everything that Leah is. She's, like, she's young, she's blonde, she's funny, she's sexy. You know, she's got, like, a really quick wit, and she's, like, obviously popular with men. Mm. And she's also, like, can joke about sex and be sort of shocking. And I think in Sonia's head, she thinks she's all those things. And then she sees Leah, who is like the embodiment of all those things, and makes Sonia kind of go a bit like, oh, maybe I'm not as young or funny or what have you as I thought I was.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that sort of jealous girl syndrome thing, where it's like, she can't just be like, oh great, this is somebody who's like totally gonna get my personality and my sense of humor, and she's treating her as competition instead.
Yeah, where they should kind of actually be bouncing off each other.
Yeah, like they, like when they first, yeah, like when they first met, I thought they were gonna be like an unreal like double act, really.
I know this is really bad, and maybe this is just a stupid assumption to make, but I do think, especially when it comes to women, if two women don't like each other and you can't pin down a concrete reason, a lot of the time it's envy or jealousy.
Always. No, I completely agree with that. I think it's such like a astute point to make. And I think it is just jealousy at the bottom of it.
But like you say, I'd be interested to see if maybe the suspicions about Leah kind of, as they get to know her, the guard might come down a bit and then they might accept her more into the fold. Because I get that also there's that kind of hazing the new girl thing,
yeah,
which went through to some extent, the ones that have joined. But yeah, this just felt like a really weird kind of hill to die on, the tattoos and the tramp stamp.
It did, because it was such like a superficial, meaningless thing.
Yeah.
It's not like a character thing or something that she'd done or anything like that. That usually is the like the niggle with the new girl that everybody has. It's just such like a weird superficial thing. It's like hating her for being blonde.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very odd. Very, very odd.
So then we go to sorry.
Oh no, I was gonna say I just love that you could tell that Leah wasn't afraid at all during that whole confrontation with Dorinda.
Oh no, and I think she's going to make really good TV.
I do as well. I think she's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, I she's going to put up a good fight, I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. I kind of love that her and Lou's little friendship that's developing.
Yeah, I liked that.
I think they're a nice little double act.
And I like her and Tinsley.
I do as well. I think they balance each other quite nicely. And I think Leah actually makes Tinsley a little bit more fun and a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, because they are so different.
Yeah, I think it's a good match.
So then we go to tutto il giorno, meaning all day. So presumably it's breakfast to brunch to lunch to late lunch to early dinner to late dinner, aperitivo, whatever, everything in between kind of place. Obviously, Ramona knows everyone.
Oh, I love that. I love that she literally just immediately peeled off from them. I was like, I'm going to go over here and now I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do a quick scan and see if there's somebody else that I know.
Truly an introvert nightmare to walk into a restaurant with a group of people and then have to go and like tend to four or five other groups and make small talk with each individual one of those. Oh, can you imagine?
Oh, it is literally my idea of hell. I genuinely cannot imagine a worse situation.
Luann kind of wants to make a toast with a very clunky but well-intentioned, I thought, volcano metaphor. And then I kind of went on a mind journey where I was just imagining the Real Housewives of Pompeii and they're all just frozen, but in their like signature poses, you know, Ramona would be frozen with her like eyes wide open and her tits right out. The one cabaret.
Can we just say as well, you know, when Ramona was like, oh, I drink vodka now, I don't really drink wine anymore, and I was like, that is your whole brand and your whole personality, Ramona. You can't give out on the wine.
Oh, I missed that. She only drinks vodka.
Yeah, when it was, I think it was when it was just her, Sonia and Dorinda and possibly Luann, when they were like sat outside and she was like, oh yeah, I only really drink vodka now, it's how I got rid of my gut. And I was literally like horrified, like, no, Ramona, Pinot Grigio is your intrinsic personality.
That's mad,
isn't it? I was horrified.
And that's what made her lose the weight,
apparently.
Hang on, I'm just writing this down. No, do you know what? I can drink vodka, but it has to be expensive vodka and it has to be super chilled. And then I can drink it straight. Then I'm okay.
Yeah. I can never do it straight. I am literally the scuzziest spirits and mixer kind of a gal ever. Give me like cheap vodka, cheap energy drink, Diet Coke. I am happy.
Oh yeah, we had this conversation, didn't we?
I'm just horribly uncultured, really. I hate wine. I can't drink beer. Spirits it is.
That's mad. What about Aperol Spritz? What are your thoughts on that?
Can't bear it. No. Is our friendship on the rocks now?
I can literally never take you to my family home. Or I can, but we'll have to like, so you can have like iron brew with vodka in it, but we'll have to pretend it was Aperol Spritz. We'll like fake it.
Oh, God. Honestly, if it was going to offend them, I would drink anything. It's like, just love me. I'm just such a people pleaser. It's like, I'll hate it, but I'll drink every drop if it'll make you like me.
Oh my God, I have to tell you about this text that I got this morning from my mum. Well, it wasn't a text, it was a Skype message, because as you know, my parents don't do mobile phones.
Yeah.
She says...
I love that.
So this was at 8 a.m. this morning, which means 7 a.m. their time.
Right.
That kitten is adorable, ... I sent her a picture of a kitten.
Okay. Still
watching more conspiracy theory TV today, ... Today, I'm all about the theory that angels and gods are extraterrestrials and the race of lizards that walk amongst us. ... Mum, kiss, kiss.
Will your parents adopt me, please?
Yes, they will.
I live for this. That is phenomenal.
My mum loves Geordies as well. That's why she married one prior to my dad.
Well, I got a text from my dad yesterday. That, so my grandma has been like on her own for like over a month now, so like in isolation.
Oh,
but she had this like massive garden, and she lives just down the road from my parents. So yesterday my parents went to her house and like went out into the garden and just sat in the garden with her, like a social distancing apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a text at 4:20 from my dad saying, "Grandma got pissed, had to drag her up the garden steps and deposit her on the sofa. Mum's got to sleep on our sofa. Result."
I love that. God, I wish I had a garden to get pissed in.
Oh, honestly, it's all we did yesterday. We made a full beige dinner and got drunk in the garden.
I love a full beige dinner. What did you have?
It was exceptional. So I hadn't realised until after I'd eaten almost all of it, but it was all vegan, which I was pleasantly surprised at.
Wait, because Greg's vegan, but you're not, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was spring rolls, these chicken bite things, mozzarella dippers, little like Indian parcel things, like not a bhaji, but like a samosa-y kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of weird Spanish croquette thing, and some falafel balls and some potato wedges. And then also hummus, guacamole, salami and olives.
That sounds incredible.
It was honestly probably the best thing that's happened to me in weeks.
How were the vegan mozzarella sticks?
Actually nicer than regular ones. I was so surprised.
Are you kidding me?
No, I was like, they were literally just like Asda regular ones, like their little plant-based section. Unreal.
Get on that.
Honestly, I was so pleasantly surprised. I ate all the chicken ball things thinking they were like non-vegan. Like, I thought they were actually chicken.
Oh, really?
No, they were vegan. And I was like genuinely shocked.
Okay, I need to get on that because I'm not vegan either, but a lot of the time the vegan like alternative is just healthier.
Yeah, so I was totally, totally surprised by it, and they were actually so good.
Oh my God, okay, noted. So then, sorry, yeah, we digress again. But I'm enjoying getting people's like little updates on what they're doing during isolation, because yeah, all got such limited scope for like what we can do that I'm getting very into like the details of what people are eating, like what are they drinking and when, you know, what are they watching, are they reading anything interesting.
So I love this as well, like it's like the little like mini tie of like everybody's day-to-day lives that people always gloss over when they're like doing more interesting things, but now that nobody has anything to do, I love seeing like the really boring bits of people's lives like that.
I like knowing like people's bathing setup, so I want to know, you know, do you have candles on, are you watching something, are you listening to something, what suds, like what level of suds, you know, are you bath bombing it, are you shower gel, are you doing like a bath salts moment.
I love that. I think it's so fascinating. I love it. It's like personal, just little personal preferences that people have that I'm like, I feel like I know you so much better now. I never knew that about you.
Yeah, and like seeing into people's homes. I've been doing a lot of that on the news where I'm like judging the reporters and the different experts by the art on their walls.
Yeah, or like what books are on their bookshelf behind them.
Yeah. I really don't trust people that colour code their bookshelves.
I know. I kind of enjoy it from an aesthetic perspective, but I also couldn't bear to do it.
Yeah, to me it's anti-intellectual.
Yeah, it's like the same people that turn all their books so the spines are at the back so you can just see the pages.
What?
Have you not seen this?
Why would you do that?
I don't know. It's meant to make it everything probably the same color coding thing, but it's like an aesthetic reason. So it's like all the pages are obviously like the same color.
Oh no, that's horrific.
It's awful, honestly. I find it so offensive.
I once saw a guy that tweeted about how if he's got a like big book and he wants to travel somewhere with it, he'll like slice it in half to make it portable. And that to me, it was, I could feel myself getting sliced in half.
That like hurts me to my very core.
It was disgusting. Like on the outside, I look like I'm doing okay, but on the inside, I'm constantly thinking about that guy and thinking that he's going about his day doing that, thinking that it's acceptable.
But like, to what end? What is the purpose? Why?
So they're easier to carry, but I don't know. I just got brought up like you don't doodle in a book. I mean, I used to doodle all over my school books, but you know, you don't draw in a book, you don't cut a book, you don't rip a book.
Never. I'm literally exactly the same. It's like, buy a fucking Kindle. If your book is too heavy, buy a Kindle.
That's true. And then if you buy a Kindle, I will hate you for other reasons.
But at least you haven't defaced books in the meantime.
Exactly. And so they're all sitting at the table and Ramona is taking a call at the dinner table. And I mean, what are your thoughts on phones?
Right. So I don't mind a phone on the table. I'm fine with a phone on the table. I don't mind a quick text, or if you're kind of, you know, Katie, if you're in a big group and like all the conversations are happening around you, but you're also not a part of them. I find it like an anxiety coping mechanism to scroll on my phone for a little bit until I feel like I can chime into a conversation.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I find taking a call at a table and not getting up to take it somewhere else so rude. I find taking the call in general, unless it's like an emergency or it's from somebody that you're like waiting to meet kind of thing.
Yeah.
I find that just incredibly rude.
Go on.
Oh no, I was gonna say just like table etiquette in general. It's like, I don't mind if your phone's there, you know, you send a quick text in between conversations, but I can't bear people that literally when you're out with them will just sit on the phone with somebody else, or will just sit texting other people or scrolling through Instagram while you're there, and you're like, why am I here?
It makes you feel like they're just looking for like a better offer.
Yes, like they're waiting for something. Like you're just a time filler until they can find something to do.
I just really don't like it. I kind of figured that, you know, we have similar upbringings and we probably have like a similar view on this. And like, yeah,
absolutely.
I, like you say, unless it was someone unexpected ringing you that you were like, oh, what's this about? And then you get up and you say, excuse me, you know, I have to take this call. I totally think Dorinda was right to call her out on it, to be honest.
I do as well. And I'm, you know, neither of us are team Dorinda, but she was definitely in the right.
Exactly. Ramona is just, she's such an extrovert. She needs constant validation from other people.
Yeah, very much so.
She's so sociable and she needs to be wanted, and you know, she just needs that.
I know. And she, it's like she can't even like just settle in one situation. Like she can't just be at a table with some of her friends for dinner without being like, who else can I speak to? What else can I be doing? Who's here? What's there? Who's gonna go here?
I yeah, just imagine that when it's of being thing. Filmed for TV, when it's your literal job to be on this show and be present in the moment, as Dorinda said, she still can't commit to doing that.
She can't. It's like the whole, like when she was like in the last season and stuff, where she would just be like, oh, I've got to leave because I've got to go on a date. And it's like, why? Just have a dinner. You can't even get through a dinner. You can't, like, you have so little time that you have to like triple book these things.
Yeah, I didn't like this as a move.
No, me either. But then I love that she brought it back by going and doing the grand tour of the restaurant for everyone.
Like, that was her redemption.
All she was missing was some binoculars. Like, she could not have been less obvious, if she tried.
She is literally like a meerkat on hind legs, isn't she? Just eyes, her wild eyes darting back and forth.
And then it was like tits up, arms up, who's here, where are we?
strut.
Yeah. But I also just found it really awkward the way she just went and stood in the middle of the room and just kind of panned around.
Like, even if you did see a group of men, what are you gonna do? They're eating their dinner. It's not a bar.
Exactly. I never understood this whole like picking up people at a restaurant thing.
It's a sit-down venue. It's a dining establishment.
Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to go just join their table? I mean, she probably would. She genuinely is the kind of person that would just sit down next to one of them.
Of course she would. She'd probably sit on one of their laps. Which, again, I respect, you know?
I just can't. I am so not that person that I can't even fathom being that person. Like, it's wild to me. It's like a foreign language. Don't understand.
I have so many funny tactics. Like, because, but the thing is as well, like, a lot of the time I don't even necessarily do it thinking like, oh, you know, this is, you know, someone that I'm gonna go home with or blah blah blah. I just do it for the sake of like a fun night out. So I have this friend where we go out a lot. She's single, I'm single, and I remember once we went out in Newcastle and I had a boyfriend at the time, so I definitely wasn't looking for anything, but she was single, and I'm very much of the opinion that, like, you're single, you know, you have fun, like, if you want to go off with a guy, like, we've had a fun night out, like, if you meet someone, you go for it, like, I'm not going to be offended, you know, just be safe. And
yeah, that's very much my philosophy on that kind of thing as well.
So we had been out in town and we hadn't really like met anyone or whatever, and then we were walking back to my flat, which at the time was near the Travel Lodge hotel. And we saw this big group of guys, and I was like, and Katya was like, oh shit, I said her name. I have to beat that out. Anyway, she was like, oh, like, look, there's that group of guys, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh, we should talk to them. And she was like, I don't know what to say. So we just walked past, and I just went really loudly, oh, I bet they're going to stay at the Travel Lodge, and I bet we're going to be kept up all night because they'll be really loud and we'll be able to hear it from across the street. And they were like, what? Who? Us? I was like, yeah, you lot. And then we got talking, and then we ended up going back to the bar with them, like the bar of the hotel. Also because I was like, I was curious to see how much of my flat I could see from the hotel. And I was like, this is a really good opportunity for me to find out. And I basically realized that the entire hotel had an unobstructed view of my living room. And I was
oh my gosh.
Learned about that like a year and a half in, which was just good. So yeah, I like to do like a walking past and saying something deliberately very loud that's going to get a reaction. And then
I love that. That's such like a sort of pseudo-aggressive technique as well. Like, it's so passive-aggressive but also incredibly direct. I love it.
It was quite funny. And then once in Brussels, I was with the same friend, and there were these two guys, and they were speaking English, but we couldn't really hear like where they were from or whatever. So I just walked past them and I was like, oh, there are no Irish guys out tonight. And then they turned around and they said in the broadest Manchester accent, they were like, we're Irish. And then we got talking then, because we were obviously like, well, you're not, like, where are you from, blah blah blah. So that was a good move as well.
I love this. You've got such power moves. I am literally cannot approach anybody to save my life.
I think it's because I've just gone beyond a place of shame. I've broken through to the other side. Like, my dignity has taken such a bashing over the past year that this year in particular.
I love this. I'm so proud.
So yeah, I guess I'm the nominated Ramona. Which, you know, I love for me.
Absolutely. I think it's a strong look for you.
So Sonia admits that she was stirring the pot. But then Dorinda also took the bait. Do you know what I mean?
I was going to say, I mean, again, it's that thing with Sonia where I sort of have that like, oh, Sonia, where I love that she was just like, yeah, I was stirring the pot. It's fine. Like,
but, and then this is the thing. It's like Dorinda's trying to call her out on it and kind of accuse her of that. But then Dorinda's the one that actively chose to fling dirt at Leah. Like, she could have just let sleeping dogs lie, and they could have had a little like schoolgirl cackle about the tramp stamp and left it at that.
Exactly. But I think it's weird that Dorinda was calling Sonia out when Sonia's actually siding with her.
Yeah.
Like, it just shows that she's not really got any sense of loyalty. Like, there's no kind of like, well, yeah, I do. Like, she was stirring the pot, but also she was obviously, I don't know, trying to have my back or some kind of warped rational logic behind it.
Yeah, so, like, she just threw someone under the bus.
Yeah, like, there's just no second thought about it. She didn't even hesitate. It was like, yeah, you were. It was all you. Nothing to do with me at all.
Yeah, I think Dorinda always feels very defensive. I think she immediately thinks that everyone is attacking her straight away. And so that's why she just goes into attack mode and goes into that whole thing where she'll just kind of throw everyone else.
Yeah, it's kind of like every man for himself with her. Like, there's no kind of like, oh, well, you know, I'll have your back, you have mine kind of thing. She's very much just like, well, no, if somebody's going to start with this, then I'm not being a part of it. I'm just going to throw you right under the bus and leave you to it.
Yeah, and you know, she kind of chooses one person every season to really, to go in on and to fall out.
Yeah. It's definitely a repeating pattern with her.
Yeah, yeah. And so that speaks to her inability to kind of have a baseline level of loyalty in a way that, again, you know, Ramona will have these blow-ups with people where, you know, she'll like say things or they'll say something to her, but then she ultimately always manages to kind of circle it back within a relatively short space of time.
Yeah, she's kind of like an equal opportunity offender. Like, doesn't matter who you are or what it is or anything like that, she'll just offend everyone on a completely level playing field.
Yeah, I think as well Ramona did indulge a tiny bit in the bitchiness towards Leah, but then I think when she had that sort of one-on-one conversation with her about resilience and running a business, you could tell that there was that respect where she was like, oh, you know, well, actually, this is someone who maybe we do have some things in common. And that is the groundwork for possibly quite a nice relationship between those two kind of developing.
Yeah, because I almost feel like Leah can probably handle Ramona in the same way that Sonia can. Like, I think if she gets to know her well enough before Ramona manages to inevitably offend her somehow. I think as long as there's a good enough grace period, I think she'll be able to take her in the same way that Sonia does.
Yeah, and just like Bethany and Ramona, because they can both kind of go at each other.
Yeah, and then they both just kind of be like, well, anyway, so what should we do now?
And because they both ultimately know that, like, well, that's just Bethany and that's just what she's like and that's what Ramona is like.
Yeah, it's not like a personal specific to you. Like I say, it's an equal opportunity offender.
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think kind of ultimately with this episode, like, when you actually think about it, there wasn't that much that happened in terms of events.
No.
But to me, it felt like quite a high quality kind of, you know, in a Victoria sponge.
Already living for this analogy. Go.
Yeah, again, I like how I'm kind of shitting on people's metaphors, coming up with my own equally terrible ones. But this to me was like a really nice quality filler before maybe things taking a more dramatic turn next episode.
Yeah, I think so. I think it set a lot of really good groundwork. And like it started to establish those kind of like alliances that we always get every season. But I think it was almost like quite a good character builder for everybody.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of introducing Leah's reception by the women. It's setting in motion some of those tensions that you can tell are going to keep flaring up. So that's going to be Luann and Ramona, Dorinda versus
pretty much everyone.
Sonia v. Leia, like,
yeah, it's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of very different fights going on, but I'm interested to see what's going to end up being the kind of, you know, every season there's like a sort of core fight that runs throughout the whole season.
Yeah.
And I'm quite intrigued to see what this one will be and who it's between. Because at the minute it's kind of setting it up where it could actually be quite a few different ones.
I hope so.
I've got a feeling it's going to be Leah and Dorinda.
I think because Dorinda gets so kind of hell-bent on going in on certain people every season, I think it could be.
And I also think Dorinda has this thing where whenever she fights somebody, like, I think she tries to get all, like, in her words, like, gangster. And she tries to get all, like, hard and scary and intimidating and stuff. Because it inevitably just makes the other people back down. But I don't think that'll work with Leah. And I think because Leah is actually genuinely all those things, I think she'll really meet a match with it.
Yeah, and I think Leah's kind of seen it all before.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't shock her or surprise her or even really offend her. I think she's almost just bored of it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think part of her coming on the show is probably just because she knows that she can take it, and because actually I think she'll find it quite fun.
Yeah, I do as well. I think she'll actually enjoy being on the show, which I think is nice.
Yeah, and I don't feel that she is too self-aware that she's kind of overly producing herself, which is quite nice, because I think when you bring in housewives at this stage in a show's kind of evolution, it can sometimes they're too aware of themselves as characters.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, they're kind of already producing how their character is going to be perceived and what's going to be said about them and how people are going to react to them. That it kind of stops them being like authentic. Whereas I feel like she is just like generally very authentic.
Any final takeaways? Any final thoughts?
I think I'm just very team Leah already. Two episodes in.
Yeah, I am, and I'm shocked to be questioning my love of Sonia so early on, because I really like her normally.
I know, I'm so sad.
But I agree with you that this kind of took the fun tipsy messy and it went to a place of being bitchy and unnecessary in a way that it was good to watch, in that it started up some drama, you know, which I think is going to then kind of evolve. But it didn't have that lightheartedness to it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There wasn't that kind of slightly jokey undertone that happens like with a lot of Sonia's stuff. So,
but like I say, I think we can rationalize it by being like, well, ultimately I think she feels threatened, and I think they all feel a bit threatened.
Yeah, new blonde girl, new pretty funny, not scared of any of them, not intimidated by any of them, not trying to crawl up any of their asses.
And you know what, I actually have a confession. I didn't miss Bethany again.
I didn't either. I thought I would, but I didn't. I mean, I miss her in general, but not really in the episodes like I thought I would.
Yeah, is she working on a new show?
I think so. I'm sure she put something up on her Instagram about it, but obviously that was before all this happened, so I don't really know what is going to be sort of coming into fruition from that. Oh, but I definitely remember seeing something about her doing a new show.
I started watching Bethany Ever After the other day, but then it just got a bit bleak. I don't know that I can rewatch it knowing how bad the Jason Hobby stuff ended up getting. Like, I don't know if I would feel complicit in it somehow.
I know, so I've never actually seen it, but I started to watch it not that long ago, and I had the same thing where I got kind of maybe 4 or 5 episodes in, and I did the same thing where I was like, oh, don't really feel all right watching this anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah,
it does feel like it should be in the Smithsonian though.
Yeah.
Like, it does feel like very important as a cultural artifact.
A very important people of oh my god, words. I've lost all ability to talk now.
But maybe something to be treated with, you know, the appropriate amount of respect for something that is sensitive.
Absolutely. A nice bit of cultural significance to show the popular culture of this time, I would feel.
Filed away in the archives, not necessarily on show because the timing is off.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be on display just yet, but maybe a decade?
Yeah, maybe in a few years time. Yeah. So Jackie O's Chanel suit that she wore when JFK was shot, I found this out the other day, her daughter donated it to the National Archives, but under the condition that it could only be displayed in 2103, so 100 years after it was donated, out of respect. So I feel like a similar kind of cooling off period for Bethany Ever After before it gets aired again.
I completely agree. I think you're onto something there.
I'm gonna write a letter. Appropriate.
Can you sign up for both of us, please,
to the appropriate authorities? Oh my god, I'm just slowly going mad at this
point. I know, I think I've cracked up at this point.
Yeah, complete madness. Right, well, I will talk to you about Vanderpump Rules next week.
Yes, I am very, very excited about that.
Bye.